Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lab. Happy WM Phoenix Open Week. Happy Super Bowl Week. If I don't know, you're one of the 150 million people who are into that sort of thing. Rex, we actually had some big news on Tuesday, but I would call it expected news. Expected news, I say, because this has been a years-long saga with LIV Golf ever since it launched in 2022 and Greg Norman promising official world golf ranking points on Tuesday. They actually got them delivered. It will begin this week at the LIV event in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. What was your reaction to the OWGR finally making the move to award world ranking points to LIV Golf?
How much of a compromise this was, pure and simple. We haven't had many of those as it applies to LIV Golf and the PGA Tour. And this is a rare, if not first occasion, when you have, now there was a mediator by way of Trevor Immelman in the middle. He's the chair of the governing board for the official world golf ranking. But this vote by the governing board was unanimous. And that's worth pointing out. There's seven people on that board, including PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan and Guy Kittings, who's the chief executive of the DP World Tour. So Trevor had to figure out how to balance both sides. He had to make sure that Jay and Guy and everyone else on the governing board were on board with what they wanted to do. And I'm sure on some level he had to appease LIV Golf, because this was not exactly what they wanted. They're only getting world ranking points for the top 10 players. They're the only tour in the world that has that restriction on them. Every other tour in the world, if you make the cut, you get some version of world ranking points. So it's worth pointing out in the statement that LIV sent out, it's clear that it's pretty unambiguous. They weren't entirely happy, but their foot's in the door, and it's been a tough couple of weeks for them. So they'll take this as a victory, but I'm just going to look at this is detente. Like, this is as good as it gets right now in professional golf. You can at least come to some sort of understanding that we've all agreed over the last 2.5 years or so that the world rankings weren't right. That you could look at them and you had to go to DataGolf, because DataGolf was the only ones that included the LIV players in this particular case. We're getting closer to that. We're not there, but at least we're working in that direction.
Yeah, and if you missed the news, that the headline here is that LIV is receiving points, but again, as you mentioned, it's only for the top 10 finishers in that week's event, very heavily weighted toward the overall winner of, again, what is going to be a short field. I think where you get down into the nitty-gritty, which I think is the most interesting, Rex, is the winner's total as it relates to the official world golf ranking. For instance, this week at the WM Phoenix Open on the PGA Tour, one of the stronger full field regular season events in the tour schedule, the winner is going to receive 59 world ranking points. This week on LIV, the winner this week, let's call it John Rahm, for instance. Again, they're playing 72 holes. The winner this week would receive 23 world ranking points. To put that in context, 23 world ranking points to the winner is equivalent roughly to an opposite field event on the PGA Tour. Your ISCO championships, your Myrtle Beaches, your Punta Cana championships. That, I think, in talking to some players on Tuesday on the range at TPC Scottsdale, that was interesting to them, because they made the point, Rex, that you could make the argument that it's actually more difficult to win an opposite field event on the PGA Tour with their fields of 120, 132, 144, even 156, I think, for a couple of them, compared to some of the short fields not as deep on LIV Golf. And secondly, I think overall, that was just their way, the OWGR's way of saying, we don't really view this as equivalent to a PGA Tour or a DP World Tour or an Asian Tour. It's still flawed in many ways. And I think that was apparent in the OWGR statement as well.
Yeah, I heard you do that report you were on right after me on Central last night, and talking about players comparing trying to win the ISCO to try, maybe trying to win this week in Riyadh. And yes, I'm always going to adhere to the argument that 156 player fields at the major championships, yeah, those are the hardest to win, because not only are you playing against the best players in the world, you're also playing against a lot of players you probably never heard of that could have a good week. And we've seen it time and time again. However, as fields have shrunk across the landscape, not just at LIV Golf, but we're seeing it on the PGA Tour. Last I checked, the signature events only had about 80 players in them. It's the exact same scenario. I mean, you can sit here and talk about, well, 80 is better than 54 or whatever the case may be, perhaps, but you're still playing against, and I'm pretty sure that if those same players you talked to were sitting at this table right now, they'd agree. John Rahm, still a world-class player. Joaquin Niemann, still a world-class player. You can go down the list. There's still plenty of really good world-class players on LIV Golf. So I'm going to push back a little bit on the idea that winning the ISCO is the same as winning this week in LIV. I don't particularly buy that. But to
not
your
the
point,
same, I'm saying the difficulty level, not the same. It's not obviously the same level of prestige. It's not the same level of satisfaction, perhaps. Just the difficulty of thinking, okay, anybody in this field of 144 can get hot, as opposed on LIV, you only have to beat 56 guys.
Again, I'm going to push back on that a little bit, because I would argue the talent this week in Riyadh is better than what we saw at the ISCO last year, of some of those opposite field events, just based on what they've done, based on the resume, based on where they are data golf, since that's the only point we can really data point we can use here. But I understand where they're coming from, and it is an interesting compromise. And again, clear, LIV Golf wasn't particularly happy with it. You pointed out the winner this week in Riyadh gets about 23, 24 points, which is actually more than what the winner is going to get at the DP World Tour event this week. However, you're going to have to play so well to make any kind of movement whatsoever. I tried to crunch the numbers a little bit. As you and I both know, I'm not very good at math, but you need to do something like what John Rahm did last year on LIV, or Joaquin Niemann did last year on LIV. Joaquin won five times, had one other top 10. He's 155th right now in the world rankings. That would be dramatically better, exponentially better right now if they were getting world ranking points. John Rahm's the same. He was in the top 10 in 12 of his 13 starts last year on LIV Golf. Those two would benefit from this. I don't know how the rest of the field really would have benefited, because as you go down the list, there aren't too many players that put together that consistent of a season where you had to be in the top five virtually week in and week out.
Yeah, shout out to our guy Rob Ops on Twitter. We've cited him on this podcast before. He is, I would say, one of the foremost experts on this, and he has actually, Rex, ran a simulation of what would have happened had LIV Golf received points over the past couple of years. And so if you factor in the formula that they could potentially be using here, John Rahm would be roughly the 11th ranked player in the world. Joaquin Niemann would be inside the top 15. Terrell Hatton, Patrick Reed, who's no longer on LIV Golf after failing to come to contract extension, they would be inside the top 30. You also have a Carlos Ortiz, Dean Burmester, who is inside the top 100 as well. So you do have a handful, let's call it a half dozen to 10 players who would have ranked inside the top 10. And that's important. That's why LIV was pushing for these world ranking points to begin with, Rex. I mean, the official world golf ranking still largely helps determine these major championship fields. And if you have a ranking system that does not take into account all of the established tours where all of the best players are competing, yeah, that's probably a flawed way to determine your major championships. And we've already seen a little bit of a small carve out, haven't we, with the Open Championship, the US Open, giving one spot to the top performing player who is not otherwise eligible. This should help allay some concerns, where if you do have, let's say, a Joaquin Niemann who posts two or three top finishes ahead of the PGA Championship, he should be able to rise enough in the official world golf ranking to where he doesn't need to receive a special invitation. He can simply just get in based on his official world golf ranking.
And I think Joaquin Niemann is the best comp right here, because he's the one we would sit around and we do all the hand wringing about, right? If he's not in one of the major championships, we're all kind of rolling our eyes, thinking to ourselves, what are we doing here? He clearly is one of the best.
He was the dominant player on LIV. Even though he did not win the player of the year, he won the most times.
And if you have a situation where he's 15th in the world, that pretty much takes care of that problem. Again, LIV Golf is not going to be happy with this solution. However, they can fix it if suddenly you have these players, John Rahm, for example, who does turn things around in the major championships and has a decent season or a good season in the majors. He takes those points back to LIV Golf. Like, let's don't gloss over this. Whatever points, they keep what they catch when it comes to world ranking points. And that doesn't mean just because they're getting 24 points to the winner now that the field strength is going to stay static. That if these players start to climb up in the rankings, the strength of field will climb as well.
I want to get into these statements, because I think they were both unprecedented in their level,
unprecedented.
Detail.
That was the word that LIV used. Very good. Well done.
So let's first start, Rex, with the OWGR, which is a statement in it, which included a quote from the chairman, Trevor Immelman, who you'll be hearing on the CBS broadcast this week at the WM Phoenix Open. They specifically cited the reason why the official world golf ranking went in this direction, to have just the top 10 finishers, to have the reduced number of points. They laid it out in explicit detail. They talked about the field size of 57 versus the minimum that they have in the regulations of 75. They talked about the exclusive no-cut events. They talked about the restrictive pathways to join LIV Golf, with just two spots filled from the Asian Tours International Series and three from what is essentially a closed promotions event, which doesn't really, although it's trying to promote turnover, if you have a closed promotion event, it really doesn't. The self-selection of players, going out and actively recruiting players to the league, such as Thomas Dietrich, the defending champion here at TPC Scottsdale, as opposed to players who are the top finishers in the world ranking or the FedEx Cup standings or some other metric. And even, Rex, this has gone down to the wire because obviously the LIV season starts on Wednesday night. The addition and removal of players based on their nationality rather than for meritocratic reasons. So this is an application that they reapplied back in July, I believe. And 7 months later, they're still going through the fine-tooth comb, nitpicking, and finding little ways that LIV, despite the changes that they've made, despite going from 54 to 72 holes, despite expanding the fields, despite increasing the pathways, it still doesn't quite measure up to what every other tour is doing. And the OWGR wanted to make that pretty clear.
Yeah, the question from Eamon Lynch last night on Golf Central is, what has changed since the last time LIV Golf applied for world ranking points? LIV Golf, remember, in 2023 actually withdrew that request because it looked like it was not going to go their way. Not much is the answer on that front. And you can go back to the original conversations. 54 holes was not a deal breaker. However, LIV Golf decided to go to 72. But if they remained at 54, the world rankings still had come up with a mathematical formula to work around that. Team Golf is not a deal breaker. They didn't particularly like it, but they could work their way around it. As is now, as was then, it was promotion and relegation, as you pointed out. And the only difference now is exactly one player can play their way on, in theory, play their way off of LIV, one more player than they could during that original request for world ranking points. To put it in numbers, and I don't know that there is a magical formula here, but if you look at what LIV Golf has now as far as promotion and relegation, there's about a 9% turnover rate. Compare that historically to the PGA Tour. That's about 22%. They're just not where the other tours are in the world. And I think that was the hangup. And that's where Trevor and the rest of the governing board came to this compromise. The idea being that, look, we're not entirely comfortable with the way you do that. You pointed out there were players this year that probably should have kept their status on LIV Golf, but that were bumped by players who probably shouldn't have status. So as long as you're going to have this a la carte situation, it's going to be an issue with the world ranking.
And they did point out at the bottom of the release that LIV is planning future changes for the 2027 season, potentially to acquiesce those at the OWGR board even more. And so they might receive more points next year. Depending on what they decide to do, they might receive fewer points. Or potentially, the OWGR said they could actually be removed from the official World Golf Ranking list if they decide to go in a different direction altogether. Sausage finger, well, please.
Sausage finger. And it's worth pointing out, as I said, Greg Norman, who was the CEO of LIV Golf at the time, decided to withdraw the bid because, again, he did not like the way the governing board of the world ranking was heading with their discussions and their decisions. This time around, there was some speculation that Scott O'Neill, the new CEO, could do the same thing if he wasn't happy with where the world ranking board was going. I will say, and again, this is based on their statement, which I'm guessing you're going to get to next, they weren't happy with it, but they know their foot is in the door and they're going to take a victory, however large or however small. It's been a tough couple weeks for LIV Golf. As you pointed out, they lost Brooks Koepka in what was a last-minute deal with the PGA Tour. They lost Patrick Reed. He'll eventually return back to the PGA Tour. They'll take this when they can get it.
Bryson DeChambeau, their biggest star, doesn't seem particularly pleased. If you saw today's golfer article saying that he did not sign up for 72 holes. John Rahm, the other big star on LIV Golf, loves 72 holes. He's been pushing for it ever since he joined the league in late 2023. So there certainly appears to be a divide there. Maybe that's just posturing. Maybe that's just leverage from Bryson DeChambeau, too early to say. But they do start 72-hole tournaments this week in Riyadh. You mentioned the LIV statement. This is what I want to get to as well. I'm not sure I've ever seen language, Rex, in a statement. Just like this. They use the words long overdue moment of recognition. Yes. We are pleased that we are finally receiving points. However, LIV is saying this is, quote, unprecedented and limiting the points to top 10 finishers, essentially excluding those who finished 11th and 57th, treating them the same. Says it disproportionately harms the players who consistently perform at a high level but finish just outside that threshold, as well as emerging talent working to establish themselves on the world stage. He said that no other tour on the planet has these restrictions in place, and they are viewing this, Rex, as merely a first step and not sort of the end of this year's long saga. What do you think?
And language like transparency and credibility. That's kind of what they said last time around, not just for the game, but for the fans as well. Again, your foot's in the door. You have an opportunity to prove to the world ranking that this system works. And if there's other changes afoot, if we get a year from now and suddenly the promotion and relegation goes from 9% to 12% or something closer to the 22% that seems to make the PGA Tour work, then maybe you do get in a situation where they do expand it and the rest of the field can get world ranking points. Because in theory, to their point, this should be based on straight math. Whatever world ranking points you bring into these events via the strength of field, that's what should go out. And right now you don't particularly have that. This feels like a manufactured number, but after a year, the world ranking and LIV Golf will probably have a better idea of exactly what their fields are. And my guess is Trevor and the board will adjust.
Yeah, I think it is a little bit awkward, but it's not something that we haven't seen on the PGA Tour, at least as it relates to FedEx Cup points. Remember they had the issue in the signature events where even those who were just barely making the cut, it was disproportionate the number of FedEx Cup points they were making as opposed to, let's say, you finished 15th in a full field event. They eventually tweaked the mathematical formula. That's not what's happening right now with the official World Golf Ranking. But I don't know. I could foresee a scenario over the next couple of years, if LIV continues to make changes, where those outside the top 10 are also receiving points. I will say, when you zoom out, it does seem like a win that after something they've been promised since 2022, LIV is finally receiving world ranking points. I'm not sure it was ever going to be a satisfactory amount. Those on LIV probably still feel like the top end talent they have, maybe if not equivalent to the PGA Tour, a full field event, certainly closer to it than a weak DP World Tour tournament, which we have this week in Qatar, where Patrick Reed is playing as well. So I don't think they're ever going to be satisfied. I don't think they're ever going to be satiated by what the official World Golf Ranking said. I can see their beef. Then again, though, Rex, on the other side of the coin, if you finish 15th, if you finish 20th in what is a top-heavy LIV tournament with 57 players, do you really deserve to receive world ranking points? John Rahm has essentially finished inside the top 12 in every single LIV event he has ever played. John Rahm, phenomenal player. John Rahm should be a top 10 player in the world ranking. But having 8 or 9 LIV players, which is, again, what the simulation would bear out had they received points over the past couple years, that feels like the right number to me.
Maybe, and maybe Matt McNeely can decide to sit down and figure this out, because he's the one, as you pointed out, that fixed the FedEx Cup points, and the tour was like, oh yeah, that math makes a lot more sense.
Genius, so maybe thank you.
Yeah, so maybe there's smarter minds out there that will figure this out in the long run. I do want to zoom out a little bit on this, and this is based on a conversation I think you and I had last week, but Victor Hovland sort of lent some credence to it with the idea he spoke this week at the event where you're at in Phoenix, just about the idea that suddenly the PGA Tour has created this really clear pathway back, whether it's via the returning member program, which is very narrow and very limited to a number of players, or the Patrick Reed situation, where it's been obvious, like they have laid this out as clear as you possibly can, that if you want to come back from LIV Golf, this is what it's going to look like. Victor Hovland kind of made the argument that it might make it easier for players in the future who, if you get offered a contract by LIV Golf, like suddenly all of those questions swirling around in your head about, well, I don't know what the future would hold, some of those questions have been answered. And to take that a step further, now the questions, at least to a smaller degree, have also been answered about world ranking points. If you feel like you can finish week in and week out inside the top 10 on LIV Golf, it's an entirely different conversation. And I'm not saying that what's transpired over the last few weeks is going to motivate players to go to LIV, but we've heard it in voices. Wyndham Clark put his voice to this. Hideki Matsuyama put his voice to this, that neither one of them particularly liked the program that allowed Brooks to come back immediately. Not because they have anything against Brooks, not because they have anything against Brian Rolapp, the CEO of the PGA Tour. They have really, really things against making bad decisions. And they were both offered large sums of money by LIV and chose not to do it. And now they find themselves on the outside looking in, thinking to themselves, I should have cashed in when I had a chance.
And Brian Rolapp would probably say to players right now who are thinking, okay, they've got world ranking points. Maybe I'm in the major championships for the next couple of years. If you want to go, go. You may change the rules. We may not. That's still a risk you're going to take. I think it's pretty clear that those players are not getting the same bag currently that they did in 2022, 2023, when Liv was just trying to gain its foothold in the landscape. We actually just saw the individual prize pool for the Liv's top finisher reduced from $18 million to $6 million at the end of 2026 for the top performing player, which is a notable change as well. So it's clear that they're not quite as free-flowing with the funds that they were in the first couple years. I certainly see the point that Victor Hovland is trying to make, though. And every individual decision is going to be different. If you are willing to sacrifice potentially what could be a couple of years in your prime to go get paid and then basically have a gap year where you're going to have to figure out something to play for a year, either on the DP World Tour, the Asian Tour, wherever else you can, or you just sit out and don't play competitively for a year, that's your choice. But that's certainly going to be a risk. And I think that's how Brian Rolapp would look at it as well.
Well, and Michael Assasso is probably the comp here, right? When you talk about him, his decision to leave Ole Miss to go to LIV Golf, to join Phil Mickelson's team. I'm not saying he was motivated by what happened with Brooks or Patrick Reed. I'm not saying he's motivated by the idea that suddenly they get world ranking points, but it has become a pathway. And I'll push back a little bit because the story I read this morning said that Michael was LIV's highest profile signing this season. If that's the case, I would say LIV Golf probably had a bad offseason. But I see the motivation now. If you're a young player, what are you mulling that? Are you going to push back on the idea?
I don't think I disagree with that. And that's
he's the highest profile signing?
I don't think that's any disrespect to a Thomas Dietrich or a Ben Ahn or an Elvis Smiley, who are all nice players. But I think he's the most intriguing
maybe, but I don't
think it's signed.
No, I would push back. He won the NCAAs, but he's done virtually nothing in a handful of PGA Tour starts. I think he's only made one cut, finished outside the top 40. Like, it's not as though he's done something. Like, you can sit and make arguments that Luke Clanton would be a really high profile signing. That's not the case with Lasasso. He doesn't have the record. Young in his career, he doesn't have that record to justify that, in my mind.
Who would you say then? Would you say Ben Ahn, who won a BMW PGA? Would you say Thomas Dietrich, who won last year's Phoenix Open? Would you say Elvis Smiley, who has a couple wins in the DP World Tour? Who would it be if not Michael Assasso, who is at least
any of those three? I would argue
profile. I'd say he's an intriguing prospect. At least he has big personality,
big game. Yeah. Now for you and I, it's perfect because I think we had this conversation when it was announced. The idea that LIV Golf, if they're pivoting away to what a lot of people thought they should do from the beginning, the idea that, okay, instead of going after your big whales and having to pay them nine figures, why don't you just start picking off the younger players one at a time, coming out of American colleges, and as we get 5 or 10 years down the road, sit and look at the scorecard and see who has the best young players, LIV Golf or the PGA Tour. That would be the way to go in a lot of people's minds for LIV Golf instead of hemorrhaging money the way they're doing it right now. But I think the best conversation doesn't necessarily mean the most high-profile signing in my mind.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Again, LIV Golf kicking
off. And nothing against Lasasso. No. He's NCAA champion. He could be a great player. I loved his reasoning, listening to what he said this week about deciding to go to Phil Mickelson's team. The idea that a young player can sit and sort of learn the game from Phil Mickelson, that's pretty cool.
And you can see Quadzilla, if not Phil Mickelson this week in Saudi Arabia, Phil dealing with a family health matter. Hope everything is okay with Phil and his wife, Amy. He'll be missing the first two events, as will Lee Westwood, co-captain of the Majestics. Again, that season kicks off Thursday in Saudi Arabia, 72-hole event. How about this week, Rex, on the PGA Tour of the Phoenix Open, where I am. I'll be covering it all week for Golf Channel. Good field. Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Jordan Spieth, Brooks Koepka. What has your attention this week at TPC Scottsdale?
Same as last week. I think Brooks going to a course where he's won before, going to a course where he probably is going to feel a little bit. Going to a course where he's probably going to feel, I'm just guessing here, but it seems like an educated guess, a little bit more comfortable on the greens than he was last week. I can't imagine he feels more uncomfortable than he was. Those are POA greens. It's difficult. If you don't like putting on POA, it's hard to explain people who've never done it, you're probably not going to putt well. However, you head to the desert where you are right now. Those are just about the most perfect putting surfaces you're going to see on the PGA Tour, at least until we get to Augusta National. The other half of this is Scottie Scheffler, because I keep going back to the notion, I love the idea that Brooks Koepka played his last regular PGA Tour event before joining LIV Golf a week before Scottie Scheffler got to world number one. There's some really interesting synergy there for me. I'm not saying that Scotty would have never gotten to world number one if it wasn't for Liv Goff. I don't believe that. I know that's something that's come up on social media over the last few years. I still believe Scotty Scheffler would have turned in to Scotty Scheffler, but I love the idea that now you have this, and I don't want to call Brooks an antagonist, but certainly he would be on the other side of this. And the idea that somehow those two could go head to head, I love the option of that.
Yeah, I do love the option of that as well. And there's other players to pay attention to, like a Jordan
Spieth. Xander, if he can, you know, if he can build on that. Xander, last after week, having the cut streak rebound
ending, Cam Young. I think this golf course, I think, fits particularly well for him. Sahith Thagala, I named him on Five Clubs with Gary Williams on Tuesday, a sort of a sneaky good January story, a player who was beset by injuries in 2025, the oblique, then the neck. All he's done in his two starts is have top 10 finishes for one of the most exciting players on the PGA Tour. All that's great, and that's fine, and there'll be plenty of time to get into that. But this week is all about Brooks, and it's all about Scotty. And you mentioned it last week, woeful on the greens, but he's never putted particularly well at Torrey Pines, even though he didn't have an opportunity to win the U.S. Open there in 2021. I was actually encouraged, Rex, by his ball striking last week at Torrey Pines, inside the top 15, strokes gained tee to green, proximity to the hole. That was one of the issues that he had last year, and he made no bones about it. He did not strike the ball particularly well, save for a couple of rounds at the U.S. Open or early in the season on LIV. I look forward to talking with him on Wednesday, asking him about the strides and the work that he has made over the past couple of months to shore up that part of his game, which has always been pretty reliable. And certainly has been the key and the cornerstone to his major championship success. Now he returns to TPC Scottsdale, where it wasn't just the two wins that he had, including the site of his first win in 2015. Keep in mind that 2022 Phoenix Open, Rex, where Scottie Scheffler won for his breakthrough title on the PGA Tour, Brooks Koepka was in the final group that day. He was in second place trying to chase down Sahith Thagala. And so this is a player who, in limited spins around this golf course, clearly likes the atmosphere, clearly likes the golf course, and I think it was pretty clear last week that his game is trending in the right direction as well. That wasn't a sausage finger, that was a Sharpie, but I will allow it. Please, floor is yours.
Mixing it up for you. Do you like the atmosphere? Because I wanted to get straight to this. This is your first week reporting for Golf Central and Golf Today. You're doing a fantastic job. Hello, Tito.
Hello, Tito.
Appreciate it, pal. This is your first week being a reporter, which is pretty cool. You're doing a very good job. I've watched. You're doing awesome work. However, you did not pick the easiest week. How's your week been? I mean, this is a bit of a zoo, right?
I haven't picked the easiest week, but I might have picked the most fun week, the most different week. If you know me personally, you know I'm not an overly serious person. I like to joke. I have no trouble poking fun at myself. We have had a lot of fun, a lot of hijinks, a lot of shenanigans over the first couple of days on Golf Today. We're recording this on Wednesday morning. I don't even think, Rex, that you have seen this clip from Monday. But Damon Hack, who I wouldn't describe as a good golfer, he's not a bad golfer. He's a decent golfer. He's a pedestrian golfer. He actually had the stones to step up on 16 and attempt the tee shot in between pro-am groups. If you have not seen this clip, I'm going to play it for you now because it was epic.
He went further than the ball. Folks,
I'm picking
up. Oh, no. Here we go.
Sweet mother.
The divot.
The divot nearly went further than the ball.
The divot nearly went further than the ball.
I'm picking up.
It went about 20 yards.
I think we're going to have to get him to sign
up.
But watch this, Rex.
Oh, I am scarlet with embarrassment for him.
Oh, that
second
was
one.
Club
that's
twirl.
Got our horn.
Look at that. Oh, my goodness. Folks, he's still
have you ever seen,
I've never seen
a greater disparity from one to the other?
That was incredible.
He hit one ball, Rex, that went 20 yards. The next one, he hit to 12 feet. He was such a good sport. He called me afterward because we were chatting about it. I said, if you had duffed both of those shots, then it's just sort of sad. It's just sort of pathetic. Everyone's just like, oh, look at this. Look at this sad sack. But the fact that he came back 30 seconds later and absolutely stuffed one was incredible. One of the great comeback stories that you'll ever see.
It was a very good rebound. I was on the show right before We came on air yesterday, and you guys were talking about it. And I think he described the first swing as just a warm up, right? Like that's just his way around it. You called him a middling golfer.
He was swinging for a long time. I'm not necessarily sure that was a warm up.
Well, okay, maybe he just needs a mulligan. He needs a breakfast ball. We all need a breakfast ball. That is not an easy position to be in. I would compare my game to Damon's probably. I mean, I would say I'm a middling golfer as well. I don't know that I would have had the courage to step on that tee, even with it. It's clear that there weren't many people in the stadium course, but even without people in there, that's got to be intimidating.
It was intimidating. So that was Damon's embarrassment on Monday. On Tuesday, it was my turn, and I was asked, Rex, if I wanted to do the famed sprint from the opening gate at the WM Phoenix Open all the way to 16. It's about a half a mile. I was a little bit worried that I wouldn't be able to do it. I'm not a runner at all. I don't think I've run a mile since like
fifth
grade when you had to do like that presidential test. And secondly, I was worried that we were going to run out of time. If it did take me too long, that like we would run out of showtime. And so they ended up doing it at the bottom of the second hour. Here is a tidbit of my sprint to the 16th at TPC Scottsdale.
Let's go.
There he is. Award-winning journalist, Ryan Lavner.
The entire time.
And weaving in. I noticed you got off to a slow start.
He's at a fairly gentle canter right now. I expected him to come out of the gates a little bit faster than this.
Yeah, they should put the rock music on, or maybe Chariots of Fire.
Then I got worried that we were going to run out of showtime. So I was like, all right, I need to start booking it.
I don't want to give this away. This guy's drawn on for three and a half minutes.
Look at that move. A little east-west.
3.5 minutes.
Ryan Lavner.
Eternity on TV.
Senior writer. Fair to middling runner,
I made a white Bronco joke.
Do you see him?
Yeah. He's walking across the back.
There he is.
I made it.
White hat, blue shirt, arms in the air, and triumph.
Couple things. My knees hurt after watching you do that. So congratulations. I'm not quite sure I could have done it. And did you not want to just try like the Tom Cruise run? You didn't want to try that?
I don't know what that's referring to.
You don't know the Tom Cruise run? Tom Cruise has a very distinct run.
Okay. I'll have to look that up. No, I was worried about just getting there. I was panting by the end. I could barely talk. I will say I can see why everyone drinks for the next 12 hours after they do that sprint, because you need it. You're tired, you're thirsty. All you want to do is sit down and enjoy yourself. I don't blame them whatsoever. So again, we're recording this on Wednesday morning. Damon's had his embarrassment. I've had my embarrassment. That, of course, leads us to Wednesday's show and what could potentially be Eamon Lynch's embarrassment. No spoilers. I have no inside knowledge. I have pitched the idea of Eamon trying to throw a football to a Travis Kelce, who is playing in the Pro-Am on Wednesday, or a Trey McBride, the all-pro tight end for the Arizona Cardinals, who is also going to be playing in the Pro-Am. I would love nothing more than to see Eamon Lynch try and uncork, what would he call it, like a four-seamer down to those guys? Would he throw it like a shot put? Would he do it underhand? Would he do like a whirly ball thing? Would he do a push pass? No one really knows, but I would love to find out.
We have a very interesting thread between you, me, and Eamon Lynch about all things sports, all things golf. But he has the funniest comebacks every time you and I are clearly sitting down on a Saturday or Sunday watching football. And he's not a fan, but he has a great sense of humor, and he's always talking about the home runs and the fly balls that are hit during football games. So it's very amusing. I wanted to go back to your run. I heard at some point someone screamed to you, "Run, Forrest, run!" What was the crowd reaction as you sort of weaved your way in between?
A lot of confusion. And again, that
area is
left of the golf course. It's sort of like the underbelly. It's like being in the bowels of a stadium. You really shouldn't look at what that area is, because you just see the majesty once you get inside the Coliseum. But yeah, I did get a run force one run, which was ironic because 30 seconds earlier, I was telling the story of my misshapen legs, which I was born with and had to have splints. It's a whole thing. That's a story for another podcast. I also, Rex, made a white Bronco joke. With the drone. Apparently that was the line that you cannot cross. I learned that very quickly, that's the rule. on golf today.
There was also a very tense moment before you started running where I think you referred to yourself as the best athlete at Golf Channel. And our friend Damon Hack, who works really, really hard, he kind of pushed back a little bit on the notion. So I'm not quite sure you could own that title.
He did. I think he did two workouts yesterday just to compensate for what he considered to be a deep insult. Again, golf today is going to be at 2 o'clock Eastern time on Wednesday on Golf Channel. Should be a lot of fun. Some interviews. I'm getting Scotty. I'm getting Brooks. Hopefully grabbing some celebrities on the 16th tee as well. Again, reporting all week from the Waste Management Phoenix Open. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. We'll be back on Sunday night. Yes, Super Bowl Sunday to do a full recap, not just of the PGA Tour event, of course, but also the LIV event in Riyadh and whatever else happens in the world of golf. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday.